Here we go.
Jake and Josh are here to analyze the game they love for the team they love.
This is another Dolphins podcast.
Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh Houts.
Thanks for pressing play on another edition of another Dolphins podcast. We are reaching the end of May and the news is starting to slow down, but we do have some big notes here. The Miami Dolphins are hosting joint practices with the Jacksonville Jaguars. They are meeting with a free agent cornerback, and we have a couple questions to discuss. But before I get into all of today's news and notes, Mr. Houts, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. The weather right now, it's just like cold and rainy. It's absolutely
miserable. Did you turn on the heat?
We turned on the heat. Yep. We didn't have it on for a few days, and then just nonstop nips
end
were freezing. So, yeah, what is going on here? I have no idea. But, yeah, it's nice to come on here and talk Dolphins football, even though, like you said, we're reaching that down part. But we do have some news to talk about and, you know, three questions that we want to ask ourselves. So, I'm doing good, man. How have you been?
Outside of the cold, dude, I've been doing pretty well. On the side, I've been doing a little freelance sports work as well. You know, there's the Western Massachusetts tournament. There's the state tournaments coming up, and I love being at the ballpark. So it's just kind of like been a win-win for me. But Josh, we talked about this in a previous show. I figured this would be a good place to start. The Mike McDaniel-led Miami Dolphins have loved doing joint practices over the last 3 years, and I think they've been a huge benefit. I can't think of a huge scenario where, like, there's been some scraps, there's been some fights. Hey, it's football, that's kind of the point. But I can't think of any huge injuries, any huge downside to doing these joint practices. And we heard, I think it was earlier this week, that the Dolphins will be participating in joint practices with the Jacksonville Jaguars ahead of their third preseason game. Liam Cohen, new head coach. Trevor Lawrence, what are some of the first storylines, Josh, as we sit here in late May, that when you're looking at those joint practices, hey, this could be a little fun to watch?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that really stands out is, you know, the fact that Travis Hunter is going to try to play both sides of the football. So I want to see how those matchups, you know, him versus Kader Coe, who I guess will be our cornerback one at that point. And then, you know, him versus Tyreek Hill on the other side of the football, or Jalen Waddle. So some matchups there. And just Liam Cohen. I mean, he is now considered one of those, you know, offensive minds, right? Those young guys, kind of like we were talking about on the previous pod with Ben Johnson. So want to see if iron sharpens iron, but I will be honest. We were talking about, you know, the Bears, the Lions, the Jags. This was probably the team I wanted to see them, you know, do a joint practice with the least. So I'm still holding out hope that they're going to be getting their kneecaps bitten by the Detroit Lions, or maybe they're going to be picking Ben Johnson's brain. But like you said, man, I don't think there's any negatives to this, especially when, you know, preseason's kind of just like, you know, it's more so for those players trying to make a roster, you know, trying to get on a 53-man opposed to, you know, what we're going to see out of Tua Tagovailoa and company. So you get to see these battles throughout the week, just knock on wood that no injuries happen, because I think that could probably be the only, you know, true negative to any of this stuff.
There was the old process back in the day, Josh. There were four preseason games. Maybe it would kind of go the first preseason game, starters would play a quarter. Second preseason game, maybe a quarter and a half, two quarters. And then that third preseason game was where we kind of got to see, all right, we're going to suit up, we're going to jump in, we're going to play into the third quarter. It was that real dress rehearsal. Things have kind of changed since there's been three preseason games. I think we hear a lot of the time that players haven't been participating in the games at all, and a big reason for that is because you have these joint practices going on. So I kind of like the timing of this. And Josh, you mentioned one of the best matchups there. Travis Hunter, what on earth, if you were a Jags fan, what would you want the what would you want Jacksonville doing with someone like Travis Hunter? Because the trade up by the Jaguars, who were originally picking fifth, they moved up with the Browns. I wanted to ask you, man, Tyreek Hill versus Travis Hunter seems pretty fun, but if you were a Jags fan and you look at Trevor Lawrence, you look at that offense, wouldn't you want him spending the majority of his time on the offensive side of the football?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, before pre-draft, I guess I didn't watch a ton of Travis Hunter because, let's be honest, he wasn't really achievable for the Dolphins, but I thought he was more so a cornerback. So to hear that, you know, they were going to play him on both sides, primarily, I think they said he was going to start, you know, focus more on offense than, you know, be sprinkled on defense. So, yeah, I'd want him to be out there catching balls from Travis Hunter, from Trevor Lawrence, getting, you know, accustomed to this offense. And that's where I think they should, you know, focus most of their attention if that's the route they go. But, again, pre-draft, I thought he might be a a cornerback more so. And another thing about this battle, I mean, I'm looking at the Jacksonville Jaguars defensive line. I mean, all offseason we're going to talk about the Dolphins offensive line and just, you know, what they can do. There are some good players that could be matched up. You know, Trayvon Walker, you know, Josh Allen Hines, they have a list of pass rushers that I would like to see, you know, how they hold up against a Patrick Paul or how Patrick Paul holds up against them in company. So there are some more matchups here than maybe, you know, I originally had thought. But again, I really, really want to see him go against the Detroit Lions and Dan Campbell, because I feel like they are just that physical, you know, they're the epitome of a physical team, and that's where the Dolphins eventually want to be.
The Dolphins met with veteran quarterback Asante Samuel Jr. I think Barry Jackson, Miami Herald, was the one to report that. A 2021 second-round pick by the Chargers. Josh, he had that massive, massive playoff game against, actually, the Jacksonville Jaguars, where he had three interceptions in LA's insane 31-30 loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars back in 2023. He allowed 10.7 yards per reception last year. The only thing that kind of made me a little queasy, and I need to preface this by saying most free agents who are still available, you're not going to be getting a 90 overall in Madden, right? It is absolutely silly. You're going to be getting guys with a couple warts. So when you're looking at Asante Samuel Jr., somebody who plays the majority of his snaps at boundary corner, and something, Josh, you kind of just joked about it, like Kader Kohu, if Jalen Ramsey's moved, he's all of a sudden your number one corner. Asante Samuel can step in and be that primary boundary corner, but the only thing that kind of made me go, ooh, uh-oh, is that he had four missed tackles in four games. I think he got hurt in his fourth game, and he had two missed tackles in the game previous to that. So that's the one thing where we're wondering, like, oh, yeah, this guy's a home run, fins up, we're going to make this work. You got to see both sides of the coin here to really assess the player.
Yeah, and I remember when we were doing, it was way back, I mean, we were doing free agents, you know, just guys that we liked, and I remember you bringing up Asante Samuel Jr. as one of those guys, you know, the Dolphins maybe should kick the tires on. And at that time, I remember reading a Pro Football Focus article that said he was like number one in missed tackles or whatever. So it is inflated because, or, you know, it does look a lot worse because he only played in four games. So I don't know if it's as bad as, you know, it might be on paper, but I always liked Asante Samuel Jr. And, you know, as part of that has to be because of his father, right? Asante Samuel, he's one of the best cornerbacks, he, you know, Philadelphia Eagle. I think he might have played elsewhere as well. But to have, you know, just his son was cool pre-draft. Everyone was hyped about him. But now, you know, the Dolphins absolutely need a boundary corner. We know they talked to Razul Douglas. I think Bradbury was another one that maybe people have thrown out there as far as a vet. But I would be intrigued by Asante Samuel Jr. because he's so young, because he has experience playing on the boundary. The biggest thing, like you mentioned, is he was hurt. I think he just had neck surgery back in April. He met with the New Orleans Saints as well. So I read an article on ESPN. Not sure who wrote it, but they said, you know, these guys are he's going to get checked up again in July. And then at that point, he'll go back and, you know, intervene with teams and, you know, figure out what's the right fit. So for me, I would love to have Asante Samuel here if the money's right. But can the Dolphins wait that late? Can they wait till July, August to bring in a guy who's, you know, by all accounts, is probably going to start? I don't know if they can. And, you know, Razul Douglas was another guy they were interested in. I think he left without a contract, worked out in Seattle. So there are still some free agents out there, but I would hope if the Dolphins are planning to have a huge, these guys are planning to have a huge role in this defense, you'd want to get them in here sooner rather than later. And that might be a little bit hard with Asante Samuel and that neck injury.
So Josh, I thought it was super funny on our last podcast where we broke down some schedule thoughts. The first comment was just, how old is Jake? And I think that was a kind of a follow-up, as you know, you see the baby face here in the 560 WQAM YouTube channel. I think that was a follow-up to the idea, Josh, where I kind of spoke to the point where we've been covering this team for about a decade at this point, even a little bit longer. And signing someone like Asante Samuel Jr., dude, doesn't that kind of ring Brent Grimes's like noise there a little bit? Because I think that was another player coming off an injury. He wasn't the most durable player in Atlanta. And then he came to Miami, Pro Bowl year, and got a massive contract extension, if I remember correctly. So what are your thoughts if they are trying to sign someone this late in the season? Does it make you queasy? Because personally, I see, you know, Rasul Douglas leaving without a contract. I see Miami not going above and beyond to trade for a disgruntled cornerback. Cornerback is a huge need, and there needs to be some urgency. But I kind of like the idea of not just trying to, you know, throw everything at the wall this early. It's still being May.
Yeah, first off, if he's Brent Grimes, please don't let him have a wife like me. We don't need that at all. We don't need that trouble. But yeah, it makes me a little bit queasy, but I do, you know, like what the Dolphins do, right? It's the Chris Greer way. They almost have a price tag. We want you at this rate, and if you're not going to sign for that, you know, we'll look elsewhere. I do feel like maybe they feel more confident in the guys they have, you know, in this locker room than maybe we do. I mean, Storm Duck, Cam Smith, they brought in Artie Burns as well, who I think has experience on the boundary. So there are some guys here that maybe they expect to rise up and, you know, maybe can be that guy alongside Kader Kohou. But I would much rather have an Asante Samuel Jr., you know, or a Rizal Douglas than to go in with the unit that we have right now. So I think it'll all eventually come together, right? We were expecting a Jalen Ramsey trade within the next 2 weeks, probably. I think they're already speaking in past tense with regards to him. So once they clear up that little bit of money that they will save, like 6 point some million, I think it is, maybe then they turn and, you know, look into, you know, then they give Rizal Douglas a contract that maybe he's more happy about, or, you know, they look elsewhere like a James Bradberry or whoever else is out there. But I'm a little queasy in all about this secondary, especially cornerback.
I still go back to what Chris Greer said at the end of the season about Cam Smith, about really that it's like the excuses are like they really just brought him into the principal's office and filmed the whole thing for us to see, where Greer kind of said, like, it's his time. Like, there's no more holding his hand. There's no more time for excuses. And Josh, you kind of understand, like, 2023 second round pick, the expectation is he's got to become a player eventually, right? You cannot be wasting another high draft pick. It's been so weird to kind of analyze the Dolphins process at cornerback, where you going back, man, to like maybe a little too far for this regime, but like Nick Needham 2019, Kader Kohou 2022-2023, undrafted guys, and then Storm Duck last year came in, started two games, and he looked like he belonged in the NFL. So the Dolphins have been able to kind of build up these undrafted guys, and then you have first round pick Noah Igbinoghi, and then you have second round pick Cam Smith, and then you trade through your nose for Jalen Ramsey and get 2 years out of it, and then plus a contract extension. So the process here, man, has just been so all over the place.
Yeah, it's been brutal. And I think, you know, it's something that you hope can finally change, right? I mean, I hope they can bring in a guy here that can, you know, be that opposite of Kader Kohou. I mean, I still think about Kendall Fuller, though. Like, how bad is his injury? You know, I would almost be calling him up to see if, you know, what his interest is in coming back and being that cornerback too. But those injuries and that stuff, it has to be more severe than the surface seems to lead. But yeah, man, they've invested so much in the cornerback room, whether it's trades, whether it's money in free agency, whether it's you know, a high draft capital, and it just never seems to work out outside of those acorns, like you mentioned. So, you know, again, maybe to a fault, they feel like, okay, we can bring in these acorns, we can develop them, and, you know, they can be that cornerback too, or, you know, be suitable enough to start in the NFL. But in a make or break type season, one where we need the secondary to play out of its mind, the defensive line does help that a little bit. But yeah, man, they need to change our ways.
Speaking of the Miami Dolphins process, one of the three questions and the one I wanted to start with today, Josh, is how do we feel about what Miami is doing at defensive tackle? Just kind of looking big picture here, because 2 years ago, after the 2023 season, they let Christian Wilkins walk. You know, you got rid of Pepper, you're left with just Saul and Zach Sealer, and the Dolphins had a pretty unique dynamic duo where it was two defensive tackles playing nearly 90%. God, man, I think it was over 90% of the snaps for the Miami Dolphins. Both guys were lingering around 10 sacks apiece, and the Dolphins had a pretty stout defensive line. And when I thought, you know, you let Christian Wilkins walk, in the instant that happens, defensive tackle becomes a need. And I was under the impression, are we going to do this again? Like, are you just letting a defensive tackle walk so you can draft a defensive tackle in the first round? And it didn't happen right away. You know, the Dolphins got so incredibly lucky with Calais Campbell. 600 snaps at 38 years old, 6 sacks. I think it's like double digit, either 11 or 13 tackles for a loss. It was very impressive what they were able to do with Calais Campbell. But here we are, man. The Dolphins drafted Kenneth Grant in the first round here to help fill the hole that was left by Christian Wilkins, that was flex sealed by Calais Campbell. But what are your overall thoughts here about this process where Miami said, no, we're not going to pay you Christian Wilkins because we have other needs elsewhere? God, man, where'd that money go? Tyreek Hill? Jalen Ramsey? Like, how do you feel about how we've gotten to this point for the Dolphins to draft Grant in the first round?
Yeah, I mean, I can be honest, the process, I'm not sure I really, you know, agree with, because I think we all want to bring back Christian Wilkins, right? Not our money. This is a guy who, you know, we watched grow in front of our very eyes, and he was an absolute beast, you know, the last season he was with us. But so that bothered me a little bit. I mean, Christian Wilkins is banged up right now. I think there was a Pete Carroll, you know, didn't he just have, so, I mean, it may ultimately work out, unfortunately, for Christian Wilkins in the Dolphins' favor that they moved on, but, you know, to get rid of him and then get lucky enough to bring in Calais Campbell, the Dolphins, you know, they had to be over the moon excited for that. As for what they did this year, I mean, bringing in Kenneth Grant, I think we were all pretty high on him pre-draft. I think he can play all over that defensive line. Again, I think, you know, coming out I almost like him more than I probably did Christian Wilkins back in the day, but I think it's just me maturing over the years. But I like what they did. And I think when you look at this unit, you know, you got Zach Sealer, who's an absolute beast, which at some point he's going to need a new contract, right? I mean, I joke that he's getting paid ridiculously low for what he wants. You know, he should probably be, you know, extended any day now. But to have then Kenneth Grant next to him, you got Jordan Phillips, who they took in, what, the fifth round, who, you know, mock draft simulators are dumb as hell, but this guy was supposed to go in like round three. He was one of the top nose tackles in, you know, college football. And then even Zeke Biggers, another guy, they brought him back, Benito Jones as well. So I really like what they did at that defensive line unit. I think that they almost pigeonholed themselves, right? We talked about all the different needs they had. Once Calais Campbell decided to go to Arizona, I think that's when they realized, you know, okay, we need to go get our guy, get that defensive tackle, and, you know, have a young player who's getting paid, you know, relatively peanuts compared to what Christian Wilkins is for the next 4 to 5 years. And it sounds like he's a culture changer, right? It sounds like, I think it was Austin Clark who did an interview and was talking about how he's like the first guy out there. He's always working on his craft. So I'm excited for what this defensive line can do. And then you know, expand on that and the pass rushers that you add to the outside. I mean, that's maybe why also the Dolphins are okay with their cornerback room, or at least seeing what they can do, because when the quarterback only has so much time to throw the football, I mean, that definitely helps out that secondary.
Austin Clark, he met with the media earlier this week, Josh, and I thought he gave a pretty good answer to, you know, my fear of, like, are we just letting a defensive tackle walk to draft another defensive tackle and you're in this process of chasing a tail? He kind of went into the explanation of how the Dolphins were able to play nickel defense despite leaning into 2-3 techniques, you know, not having a true nose tackle on the roster where they would be making chicken salad out of chicken you-know-what. So while you're trying to get another, like, generic, for a lack of better words, like Christian Wilkins, he's, let's say, an 88 overall in Madden. While you're still looking for that 88 overall, Kenneth Grant, he does things differently. He can line up as the nose. Jordan Phillips, he does things differently. He can line up as the nose. And the same is true with Zeke Biggers. So listening to Austin Clark talk kind of made me feel a little bit better about this process, where while you're looking for another, you know, top tier player, it's like a slot corner or a slot receiver compared to a boundary receiver. They're just going to do things differently. Josh, I think you said Kenneth Grant is Snorlax with like rocket boots on, which I think is like the greatest thing ever with that dynamic first step. And you kind of go back to the issues the Miami Dolphins had late in the season. Like, it was stopping the run, and that was an issue despite having Sealer and Wilkins. Yes, you could maybe try to find some linebackers or whatever it may be, but you do see how it is different. And that's kind of was one of my biggest questions, is how is this different than just paying Christian Wilkins? Because you look at it big picture, dude, like, we didn't want to pay Christian Wilkins last year and this year $18 million. The cap hit is $18 million. Yes, that includes a $37 million cap hit next season, nearly 13% of the cap. But the thing about signing these players to long-term deals, you restructure them and you had them in the building. And instead, we're in a situation where we're going to have to deal with a Jalen Ramsey $25.2 million dead cap hit. Yes, that drops to $6.7 million if he's traded after June 1, but you just kind of look at the big picture process. And I think this is one of the scenarios that we kind of got to keep in mind when we're talking about who to give a contract to, when to wait for a contract, and kind of talking in a circle here, but I do want to give the Dolphins some credit, because we did hear they were trying to get this deal done for a couple years, and Christian Wilkins, it really did sound like he wanted to bet on himself. But just based on how the dominoes have fell, based on how the Jalen Ramsey thing fell apart, based around, you know, you gave Tyreek Hill the money instead, you almost wonder if you're really hurting yourself by making Christian Wilkins the highest paid defensive tackle in the league.
Yeah, and that was the argument at the time, right? And I mean, again, a blindfold on homerism. You're like, okay, no, I just want Christian Wilkins back on his team. I just want him out there, you know, grabbing Josh Allen on the bottom of a pile. Like, this is a guy that we want on our team. But I do think it maybe would have pigeonholed him. And, you know, for Christian Wilkins was versatile. You know, he can move around that defensive line. But Kenneth Grant, I mean, this guy, you know, I forget who it was. They asked, you know, Austin Clark what it feels like drafting three nose tackles. And I mean, I don't think he's a nose tackle, right? He can play nose, but he can also move to the outside, can, you know, play some three tech, five tech. And the same can be said about Jordan Phillips. You know, most of his stuff's in the middle, like at playing nose tackle, but there's no reason why he can't slide around. And both those guys, you know, can get in the backfield better than some others. So I like the way it ultimately worked out, because I was a Kenneth Grant fan. And again, as long as he's next to Zach Sealer, I mean, as long as Zach Sealer's there, I feel pretty damn good about that defensive line, regardless of who lines up against him. Now you got Kenneth Grant, Jordan Phillips, a lot of young guys who Austin Clark is going to develop. And I think he's one of the better, again, homer, right? One of our better you know, positional coaches, and excited to see what he can get out of them. So I like the way it all worked out. But, you know, 2 years ago, I'll be completely honest, I was very sad to see Christian Wilkins go. I was a little bit okay with it once Calais Campbell got signed. But really right now, stoked for what Kenneth Grant and that defensive line can do in 2025 and beyond.
Stoked about the defensive line, but how do you feel about the offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, Jake, right? The Dolphins did a lot this offseason. One of the biggest signings was what, James Daniels, 3-year, $24 million. Where he's going to play on the defense or offensive line is really to be determined. He talked about how he doesn't know if it's a preference to play next to a younger player like Patrick Paul, or if it matters to play next to Austin Jackson. So we'll see where he lines up. But I like what the Dolphins did here, right? They brought in James Daniels. They went out and got Larry Borum, who to me, the more I read about it, he seems like he might be that versatile swing guy that might be battling with Liam Eichenberg, who they also brought back Liam Eichenberg. So I like Liam Eichenberg as that Jesse Davis type. But nothing more than that. We don't want to see him starting. And then, of course, they trade up to get Jonas Savanaya, who they obviously love, the guy who it sounds like could probably come in here and start day one. So I'm looking at this offensive line, assuming everybody's healthy. You got Patrick Paul, you know, Savanaya, Aaron Brewer, James Daniels, and then Austin Jackson. I mean, that sounds really good on paper. But as we know, something will happen and some domino will fall where the Dolphins will need someone to step up. And at that point, then that's when I get a little queasy, right? We don't have a Kendall Lamb to rely on who could just come in and play tackle at some points. Or even Robert Jones, I guess I should give him a little bit of credit, right? He could come in and play guard in a pinch. So right now the starters look great, but maybe would have wanted to see him do a little bit more. Maybe bring in a depth piece at center, right? They still have Andrew Meyer on the roster.
They do.
I mean, that would be the biggest thing. I just keep thinking that if anybody's going to go down that offensive line, it would completely screw the season. Aaron Brewer would try that guy.
Hey, man, Liam Eichenberg, he does have experience at center too, so you always wonder about that. Do you think the offensive line is better than it was last year? And I do think you make a great point, because I was going through some numbers, and I think going back to last year, the most consistent offensive line, the unit that had the same five players on the field together most frequently, I think it might have been the Eagles, but either way, man, it was about 70%. So you're already talking about 30% of your snaps. At the bare minimum, you're going to have some sort of depth piece have to step in and take some snaps. I'm interested to see Andrew Meyer, because he's been with the team for a couple years. It's the in the purest form, it's in Butch Berry, we trust. We haven't seen him play, but he's always, you know, been floating around the practice squad. So that's one player I'm interested to see, especially in preseason and training camp. But man, that the backup room, backup left tackle, you're looking at Ryan Hayes, like former seventh round pick. You got Keon Smith still in the building. I'm not saying this to bash on the Dolphins. What I'm actually doing is saying this to kind of understand that no team has this pure depth in the NFL. And I think we have to kind of hope that you have these returners, Keon Smith, Ryan Hayes, who just understand enough where if they have to play in place of Patrick Paul, in place of Austin Jackson, they can do enough to survive. And it all goes back, dude, I think, to the Liam Eichenberg conversation. You're not signing these guys to start. You're not developing these guys to start. You're signing and developing them to play. Three games, four games, something like that. But and I go back to last year, and you know, I started with a question, which is journalism 101, a no-no. I asked you if the offensive line has gotten better. I think that's kind of where the conversation has to be had.
Yeah, I think you're right. And one interesting note, I looked it up. Larry Borum's 26. Liam Eichenberg's 27. I thought for some reason Borum was older than him. So I think that'll be that battle there. But for me, I mean, I guess the question really comes down to, you know, losing Teron Armstead. You know, we know his availability wasn't what we had hoped, you know, but he still grinded through and he still played at, you know, a top level when he was out there. So I'm wondering if, you know, we're assuming, not necessarily we, but Dolphin fans are assuming that Patrick Paul's just going to come right in and be, you know, you're not even going to skip a beat without Teron Armstead. I don't think that's the case. So I'm wondering how much, you know, pressure is going to be on Patrick Paul. You know, couldn't his offense live and die if he's not, you know, on the top of his game? I mean, that could be a question to watch. You mentioned some of these backup guys, man. I'm just scared to death that we're going to see Jackson Carmen again start, you know, late in the season, you know, with games that we need to win on the line. So the question on whether or not it's better, that's a tough one. I mean, obviously the guards, I think, are going to be better, but it comes back to, is Patrick Paul going to be half the player, I guess, or, you know, 75% of the player that Teron Armstead was when he was healthy? And how's Austin Jackson coming back from injury, right? I mean, we just, again, assume that these guys are going to come back and be playing at the top level again. Austin Jackson, you know, was banged up, was out a little bit. So I like what we're doing here. But like you said, best, Jake, in Butch Berry we trust, because that's what it really all comes down to.
Last year and the struggles on the offensive line, especially when it came to running the football, really happened when you had Austin Jackson get hurt, and all of a sudden you have, you know, Kendall Lamb in there. You have William Eichenberg kind of all of a sudden on an island at right guard. And I want to give Eric Smith, a recurring guest, credit, because that's one thing he always brings up. It's not the idea of Liam Eichenberg that's bad. It's the idea of just Liam Eichenberg that might not be too settling. And you make a great point, man, about that left side of the line with Patrick Paul. We've seen the Dolphins, you know, hey, we have a plan for our second round picks. Cam Smith, we had a plan for him. Patrick Paul, there's a plan. We got to see the plan develop, man. We have to see this thing really come into fruition here. And I want to ask, do you think it will be Paul, Daniels, Brewer, Sevenaea, and then Jackson, that in that order?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, I'm just not an offensive line guru, but I do think having James Daniels next to Patrick Paul will help him out immensely. And I do think Jonas Avenaya, at least, you know, barring any setbacks, I think he should be able to come in and beat out what Liam Eichenberg and some of those other guys. And they traded up, you know, they traded up. What was it? I have it written down here. They traded up to leapfrog in front of the New England Patriots to get him. They give pick 48, 98, and 135. So, they gave up the draft capital, which I guess that really doesn't mean anything because they did the same thing for Liam Eichenberg. But I do think those will be the starters, barring any crazy signing, you know, late. There's still some free agents out there if they really wanted to get, you know, creative or something were to happen. But I think that we're going to live and die by that offensive line. And, I mean, that's the truth, right? We're going to live and die by that offensive line because Tua Tagovailoa, he gets hurt, man, as we've seen in years past. I mean, that's pretty much, we're cooked at that point.
Do you think there will be a battle, quote unquote, for that right guard position, considering the draft capital? Because I've seen some people say that he's going to compete for the right guard job. I don't think you trade up for someone if you don't see them as a day one starter. I don't think there's a story here. I think he is just the starter.
Yeah, that seems like coach talk, you know, just to say that. So, you know, Liam Eichenberg maybe comes out there and plays his best ball, or, you know, whoever else, you know, could possibly be in that situation. But, I mean, that would be the most disappointing thing, right? They trade up for Jonas Avenaya, and you hear Liam Eichenberg's out playing him in practice. I mean, and is that crazy to think about when a guy's transitioning to the NFL game that, you know, played right tackle last year or for most of the season? I mean, or left tackle, 345 snaps at left tackle, 365 at right tackle. So, we know he's a guard. Dolphins announced him as a guard. I feel like he's going to come in and be that best fit there. But, I mean, it's the Dolphins, man. I just feel now I have that thought in my head, and that's terrifying me.
The reason we went with the offensive line, Josh, is because of the third question, our final question, is can the Miami Dolphins offense lead like it did in 2023? In order for the Dolphins to get back to the playoffs, they're going to need to be a top five unit somewhere. I'm not going to guess special teams. The defense, I think I really like Anthony Weaver. I think he's like a great head coaching candidate in the future. And I also think he's great at, sorry if I already used this once today, but turning you know what into chicken salad. He does great at making the most out of what he has available. So when you're kind of looking at how, all right, if the Dolphins are want to be pushing for a playoff spot, and it doesn't have to necessarily be like pushing for that AFC top spot like they were in 23. But in order to be like in the hunt, in the race, the Dolphins offense needs to be the leading group here. And it starts with that offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, you have the numbers written down here. Well, I guess I have some too as well. But I mean, most of their success lived and died by that run game, right? It seemed like, was it a few years ago or 2 years ago, 2023? Wasn't that when Raheem Mostert had 21 touchdowns? I mean, the offensive line was absolutely cooking. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with the offensive line and things like that. So, I mean, I don't know that they have to be necessarily on that level. They were, what, 29.2 points per game. We know all the explosive plays they had. You know, they were unstoppable at times. I mean, this was the greatest show on surf is what we were calling them, right? This was one of the best offenses that we've ever seen with our eyes. And, you know, to then fall back last season, drop down to 20.3 points per game, 22nd in the league. It was a huge disparity there. How much of that falls on Tua Tagovailoa's injury? I mean, I kept thinking about that because that was the main difference, right? 2023, Tua Tagovailoa was fully healthy. You had that offense cooking, but then at times last year, it sputtered, right? You had Snoop Huntley in the lineup, the run game at that point, you know, guys are dropping down the box. The run game's not as successful. So I don't know if it necessarily has to be on that 2023 level, but it has to be much better than 2024. And you got to find that happy medium between the run and pass game, because in 2023, they were just force feeding Tyreek Hill, right? He almost had 2000 yards. That was the season where he was, you know, going to break Megatron's record. It almost seemed like that's what they were going for. Last year, down season. Jonnu Smith stepped up. We saw Devon Achane become more productive. They have the weapons. They just need to figure out, you know, how do we get our guys involved? Who's the guy that's going to make those big plays? And most importantly, to get that run game cooking. And I do like what they did in the run game. They drafted Ollie Gordon in the sixth round. You know, Jalen Wright, they traded up for a guy. You know, we keep talking about them trading up for players. Sometimes that doesn't work out. Sometimes it does. And then they got Devon Achane, who's an absolute monster. So I feel like this offense is going to finally come together this year. I just wonder how much of it is defenses figuring them out, right? I mean, Mike McDaniel was this offensive mastermind that, you know, was one step ahead of teams. Seemed like it fell back again last year. I'm just hoping they can bring it all back together, because if that offense is cooking and even, you know, slightly above what they were last season, slightly under 2023, it should be a pretty damn good season for the Dolphins, because that defense last year, like you said with Anthony Weaver, turned chicken, you know what, into chicken salad. He did a pretty good job with what he had, and I think he'll again do that this season.
It's interesting to talk about the 2023 team, because you instantly go to the Tyreek Hill 2K chase, right? 119 receptions for 1,799 yards, 13 touchdowns. Jalen Waddle right there as well, 72 receptions, 1,014 yards, 4 touchdowns. Oh, by the way, Raheem Mostert led the league in rushing touchdowns. Josh, we talk about how like they were force-feeding Tyreek Hill, but like, were they? I think what they did so well, the answer first and foremost is yes. But at the same time, I thought McDaniel had an awesome way of balancing things, right? You know, we all talk about Tyreek Hill, but Raheem Mostert, dude, he led the league in rushing touchdowns. And I think a big part of that was the Dolphins getting inside the 10-yard line. And I don't necessarily mean like at the 1-yard line. I don't mean at the 2-yard line. I think what worked so well is that this team had guys you could trust as receivers and running backs. You see the Dolphins get to the 7-yard line. All of a sudden, you got big Robert Hunt coming down, running through the lane instead of, you know, having to go guard Tyreek Hill. You got to deal with big Bob Hunt. And all of a sudden, Raheem Mostert can walk in for like a 7-yard touchdown run. I always kind of think to myself, like, having that first and goal from like the 10-to-8-yard line just feels like one of the hardest situations in football, just because you have such little room to work with. And the Dolphins made that their biggest strength, just from having all these different playmakers. I go back to last year. Devon Achane averaged 2.4 yards before contact. In 2023, 4.8. Double the number. And that, you consider it too, man. You had Raheem Mostert, 1,000-yard rusher. You had Devon Achane, 800-yard rusher. Tyreek Hill, his 1,800 yards. And Jalen Waddle, his 1,000 yards. So you kind of had four guys that you could kind of rotate through this offense to really have a very explosive offense. It's so cool to talk about it too, dude, because like you talk about, you know, it was all throwing the football and it was all just like dinking and dunking to Tyreek Hill and Jay. Like, no, the Dolphins offense was so cool. It was so well balanced. It was so diverse. How do you feel about the unit going into this year? Do you think they have those four rotating pieces that you can really, more than anything, trust?
That's the biggest thing, is I don't even know if I can trust Tyreek Hill at this point based on that outburst late in the year. So that's a good question. Jalen Waddle, I mean, even last year, I mean, I don't want to say he had a down, like he was disappointing, but he wasn't our Jalen Waddle that we've, you know, been hyping up and putting on this pedestal. So I guess my biggest thing would be, can you trust Tyreek Hill? You know, is he going to be throwing tantrums mid-season? Robert Prince seems to have a pretty good relationship with him, but they do have those playmakers, right? Jonnu Smith was an absolute animal last year. I don't know how he can exceed those, you know, what he did last year. That's going to be pretty tough. But, you know, hearing Devon Achane himself speak on how he had, you know, left some plays on the field, you know, how he's getting more involved in the pass game, how he wants to have, what, like 1,000 yards rushing, 1,000 yards receiving or something crazy like that. I mean, I think that's achievable with how dynamic he is. So I got Jonnu Smith, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Devon Achane. Would those be the four guys? I mean, I feel confident in them. And then we added Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, who I think his biggest thing is, you know, what his asset's going to be as far as in the run game, right? We saw some highlights going around. He's a pretty damn good blocker, and, you know, that's going to go a long way when you think about what the Dolphins needed to do in the run game to add to that. And then I didn't even bring up Malik Washington, right? I love bringing up these acorns. I'm going to joke that Taj Washington, Turbo Taj, is going to be a beast as well. But, you know, there are some guys that – there are some playmakers on this offense. I guess my biggest thing is the play calling and how you're going to distribute that thing around, because, you know, Tyreek Hill is already kind of being a little whiny. He might get upset if he's not getting force fed, you know, so whatever it might be. But I feel really confident in this unit. And a lot of that has to do with, like we talked about, number two, man, the offensive line. I mean, that has to help you at least feel pretty good about what the Dolphins can do and maybe replicate some of that success in 2023.
I do wonder, like, all right, so the offense was awesome in 2023, right? Second in the league, 29.2 points per game. And we still entered the offseason like, all right, we got to get a little better here. We got to figure some things out. And we put our brain power together. We're like, all right, Odell Beckham Jr., right? That's what this team is missing here. We need a little Odell Beckham Jr. action. Didn't work out. Absolutely did not. We did see Malik Washington emerge late in the year. And Josh, I wanted to ask you this. If you kind of go back to that 2023 thought process of like the Dolphins need that one more guy, that one more receiver, I look at Nick Westbrook-Ikhine because I think about Cedric Wilson. Cedric Wilson was 6'2", 197. Ikhine is 6'2", 211, a little bit bigger. He still has that physical body. That's what the Dolphins really needed. Odell Beckham Jr. was going to be that like one-on-one on the flanker side matchup and maybe beat that guy in coverage. But I really like what Nick Westbrook-Ikhine brings as just that physicality that we did have with Cedric Wilson, who I thought did have some pretty solid moments when you consider that, hey, after Waddle and Tyreek combined for over 200 receptions, you're going to get what's left over. I think Ikhine has that opportunity, that potential to be that guy to say, all right, you're only going to get three targets a game. All three of them could be highlights, but I wanted to ask you, who should be the front runner for wide receiver three? Do you like Ikhine, the first year guy, or Malik Washington, just based on the physicality and the well-rounded versatility that he brought last year as a rookie?
Yeah, that's a good question. I really do like what Malik Washington brings. You know, I kind of think I said it. Kind of reminds me a little bit of a Jarvis Landry, right? He's not the fastest guy, but he's going to make those grabs. He can play in a slot. But I think you touched on with Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, right? He has that size that's different than some of these other receivers, you know? And for so long, the Dolphins have been chasing that true number three. You mentioned Cedric Wilson. He seemed like that guy one season. Played pretty well. He had, what, three touchdowns, 296 yards, like you mentioned. But then they tried to do it with Odell Beckham Jr. just did not work out. So I think it'll be Nick Westbrook-Ikhine's job to sort of speak lose, but I don't think there's any issue with Malik Washington being that number four receiver. I mean, that's a good problem to have. So I think based on his, you know, size, some of the things he can do differently, I think that's why I would have Westbrook-Ikhine as that number three. Would you change it any differently, or you agree with that?
I agree with that, and I think Malik Washington entering year two, even early on, if he has to – quote unquote, has to be like your fourth wide receiver, maybe that first guy off the bench. I think that's A-okay. And God forbid there's an injury to Tyreek and there's an injury to Waddle. I think Washington can not replace them. Absolutely not. But just get things done, move the sticks, be like kind of like Jarvis Landry was in that role, just kind of like a volume monster. Josh, who are your big four to kind of lead the offense again?
I had Waddle. I mean, it's cliche. I had Achan Waddle, Jonnu, and Tyreek Hill, as long as he's not a turd. But, you know, we talked about this wide receiver three, right? They tried to do it also with Braxton Berrios, who was a little bit undersized. They also had River Craycraft at one point. We had Trent Sherfield as well, right? So I feel like, you know, we talk about Pokemon all the time. That Nick Westbrook-Ikhine seems like that final evolution, right? This is that wide receiver three, the big body guy that we could use. So those would be my four. Would you change it anyway? I mean, I feel like Devon Achan's just going to eat this year, but I could be completely wrong with that.
You're 100% right. I think Achan's going to be an absolute monster. Just listening to him talk, where he's talking about like, hey, you know, I got into my head too much. I was always trying to hit home runs instead of just being a consistent player. He was had the most receptions among running backs in the entire NFL last year. I think he was in second in targets behind Alvin Kamara, which just speaks to his consistency in his hands, just that coming out of the backfield. But if Achan's so involved, Josh, think back to 2023, that big four, quote unquote, it had two running backs. I think that is going to be the biggest issue for this Miami Dolphins offense. Is Mike McDaniel really finding a second running back that he can trust to be part of that the offensive orbit around Tua? Because 2023, man, Devon Achan, 800 rushing yards on top of Raheem Mostert's 1,000. That was the only season that any other running back was absolutely close to Miami's lead horse in terms of just production. That is going to be my biggest question here, is because you traded up for Jalen Wright. Everybody, dude, every quote I hear about Ollie Gordon talks about how awesome he is, how he's already in there asking questions. He doesn't look like a sixth-round rookie. He doesn't talk like a sixth-round rookie. I need to see one of those guys really become a featured piece of this offense. Not only because it gives the Dolphins two running backs, it forces Mike McDaniel to change things up a little bit instead of just force feeding Devon Achan. Because I think that's also one of my fears here. You have this 5'10 running back, and he had a great quote too about how important it is for him to stay healthy, and he's in the workroom every day and he's showing up during OTAs. And he was talking about how he kind of learned that from Teron Armstead, that I thought was very cool when you want to talk about culture. But you need more. You can't, it's unrealistic to say like our entire offense can revolve around this guy when he's going to be your primary solution as a receiver and your primary solution as a running back. So for me, man, I go back to what, 2023, you got the Jeff Wilson game. Last year, you had the Jalen Wright game against the Patriots. You can't have games anymore. I think you really need to have a jab. You need to have somebody that can jab with Devon Achane's uppercuts. Otherwise, you know, everyone's going to kind of start to lock on him a little bit more. And I don't think you'll have any chance of getting close to that 2023 team.
I love that you brought that up, because I was sitting here looking at him like, we're really focusing on the receivers so much. And you brought that up because, I mean, they play so much 21 personnel, right? We always see the two running backs, and that also allows, you know, Achane to move around and be more of a receiving threat. So, yeah, I want to see which of those guys step up. I do think Jalen Wright should probably have the inside track, right? He's been here a year. We saw a little bit of it last season. But like you mentioned, man, everything you hear about Ollie Gordon, whether it's, you know, his impressive college resume, whether it's what he does in the pass protection, even in receiving a little bit. So, it's a good problem to have. I like this running back unit. I mean, I'm sitting here, I feel like I'm just saying I like everything better this year, but it's hard not to, right? You see the vision on the offensive line. You see the receivers, as long as everybody's head's in the game, what they can do. And then is Tua Tagovailoa healthy? I mean, if Tua Tagovailoa is healthy, you know, we know what he's capable of. So want to know who's going to step up and be that number two running back. I do think it'll be Jalen Wright, but if either of those guys, I have no preference, right? This isn't about which guy it is. It's about having that reliable guy who can pick up the yardage when you need it, or when Devon Achane's, you know, spread out wide, or things like that. And that just opens so many things up for the offense. Do you agree with the tight end position that Jonnu Smith, it might be hard to replicate that insane season he had last year? And then how important do you think Julian Hill is to this thing? Because, you know, we talk about the offensive line. I know a lot of people are down on Julian Hill, but, you know, the more you see some of the big run plays, the more you see, you know, what worked last season, Julian Hill had a lot to do with that based on what he did in the run game as far as pass protection or run blocking and things like that. So I think he might be a little bit of an X factor, sort of speak, not going to catch many passes, but I think he does have a little bit of a say on how this offense is going to tick in 2025.
I like the way you worded that. I really like that, Josh. I think Julian Hill can be a genuine chess piece that can help this offense, not catching the ball, not absolutely not, but just as a blocker. And that's as a blocker, run blocker, and as a pass protector too. When you think about rookie or second year player Patrick Paul on the left side, and if you really wanted to take a route where you have the second year player and then maybe put Savanaya at left guard, having Julian Hill over there as a supplemental blocker seems like a pretty good fallback option. Having Alec Ingold as a supplementary blocker over there seems like a pretty good option. And when the Dolphins try to take this next step to try to stay ahead in terms of running the football instead of doing different things in the passing game, I think there's a real opportunity there. To it'd be like winning in the margins, though, and that's kind of the key here, man, because the Dolphins, for as long as we've been fans, as long as we've been covering this team, they're in the hunt, right? They're 7-9, they're 8-8. You need to find ways just to like keep it clean and win in the margins. And I think having that steady blocker that you've developed over time, and it's great that in May 22nd, we're really giving a positive outlook for someone like Julian Hill. I can't read the comments on that. But Josh, here's a question that I'm very, very, very interested by. Last year, Jonnu Smith, 88 receptions, 884 yards, 8 touchdowns. Played all 17 games. The 88 receptions was the most of his career. 111 targets, dude. 41 more than any other previous season. 8 touchdowns. He actually had that in 2020 with the Titans as well. But the reason I'm bringing this all up, Josh, is because he's 29 years old. And he was unlocked in Mike McDaniel's offense. It sounds so corny to say, dude, but if you want to talk about someone being genuinely unlocked by a scheme, look no further than Jonnu Smith and the Miami Dolphins. If his numbers are relatively similar, God, let's even just say 70 receptions on 85 targets, 600 yards and 6 touchdowns. At 30 years old, are you giving Jonnu Smith a contract extension?
Man, I mean, if it were me, I probably would have already given him one, right? I would have saw what he did this year. I probably would have tried to extend him, but that's not the Chris Greer way. So that's a good question, especially if, you know, we see that production drop off a little bit. But I think, like you mentioned, man, this was truly him being unlocked. So, like, I keep saying, can he replicate last season? But, you know, can he even go a step further than last season? That's a question that could also be asked. And, you know, I love how you brought up Alec Ingold, and, you know, we kind of overlook him, but his importance in the run game is absolutely, you know, he matters, right? We want to see him get more involved in other ways, but he matters a lot in the run game. Another name that I just kind of forget is even on the roster, Farrell Brown, right? He came in and said straight up he wanted to be one of the best blocking tight ends in football. So him, you know, he's also going to help in that aspect. Again, not going to catch any passes. Might have the Durham Smythe 8-yard every now and then, but you know, him and Julian Hill could really impact that run game. And, you know, again, it sounds like if they can get that run game going where it was in 2023, that might open everything up. So a long-winded way of saying I would personally extend Jonnu Smith, but you're getting there and 30 years old. That's a better question for Chris Greer and, you know, his job security.
I love that, you know, when you start talking about the 2023 Dolphins and you're like, yeah, you know, you had Tyreek Hill, he was awesome, or Raheem Mostert, he was awesome, but there was so much more going on. And I think for the Dolphins to reach that point, like, you're going to need someone to be Trent Sherfield and score on a 65-yard touchdown to begin the game. I do think if you really want to, I think Tyreek Hill, dude, he's not going to be the 2K guy, famous last words. I think you kind of know what you're going to get, though. Maybe some drops in a big game. I'm going to throw a little shade because we're 45 minutes into a podcast on May 22nd. But overall, like, he's going to be Tyreek Hill. And whether that's 10 receptions for 120 yards and a touchdown, I think you kind of know what you're getting. I don't know. Like, how are you feeling about Jalen Waddle? Do you feel that he's still that guy that we saw 2 years ago, 72 receptions for 1,014 yards and four touchdowns? Because, I mean, I even go back to, I think it was either 2023 or 2022, they were playing an NFC North team. I can't remember if it was the Packers or the Vikings, but he had a massive drop. And I remember there was just a picture of him in the sideline wearing the towel on his head, and you could just see the fire on his eyes. And you saw him just come out and kick the doors down and be just one of the best dynamic wide receivers in the league. And for 2 years, Josh, we had to see we enjoyed seeing the rankings where it was like the top wide receiver duos in the entire league. And Miami was always top three because of Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. How do you feel about Jalen Waddle entering a crucial year? Somebody who also got a pretty big contract extension and somebody who was MIA at times last year.
Yeah, but Waddle's a player who, you know, we absolutely love, but like you mentioned, man, there were some crucial drops. I remember, you know, going up instead of using his hands, he's maybe using his bodies and things like that, or, you know, just, you know, like Tyreek Hill, you know, yeah, being, you know, minimizing themselves, or, you know, going AWOL, you know, they're not there in the biggest games of the year. So I just want to see Jalen Waddle have more of that season, you know, where he's barking at people, he's getting the big plays, he's outrunning them. You know, was it a fourth down? There was a quick slant he took to the house against New England Patriots. I mean, we remember all the explosive plays. We know Jalen Waddle is that type of player, but I feel like we just need to see consistency, and he needs to stay on the field as well. And, you know, we need to see just a better version of him. So I like him opposite Tyreek Hill. I guess I would become queasy if, you know, they eventually, I guess next year, I don't think a trade's happened this year for Tyreek Hill, but next year, you know, can he rise and be that wide receiver one would be my biggest fear, because, you know, we've seen glimpse of it. We've seen a bit of it throughout his career, but it just seems like he needs to be a little bit more consistent for me. So big fan of Jalen Waddle. Hope that he can, you know, bounce back, right? Bounce back would be a better word based off of what he did last season. Is there anybody else you like in this? I'm looking at Eric Azukama. I mean, that's a dude I kind of forgot was even in this thing. D. Eskridge, you know, there's some other guys, but it seems like the big three is obviously going to be Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, and then Malik Washington will be that number four guy.
D. Eskridge made a pretty cool one-handed catch. I don't know if you saw that.
That was dope.
Off-season stuff, man. This is what we're here for. I think consistency is so important. I go back to week one last year against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Waddle caught all five of his targets for 109 yards. 8 of 9 targets for 144 yards and a touchdown against the New England Patriots. I think my favorite stat line of all time. In Buffalo, 2 receptions for -4 yards and a touchdown. And a long of 12. That's still my favorite stat line of all time. But I think when you... Even seeing a stat line like that, man, the consistency, I think it starts with the offensive line. just to kind of tie everything back together. I think this dynamic receiving core, I think these dynamic playmakers are only going to be as good and consistent as the offensive line. And I'm not saying the Dolphins need to have a top offensive line, but we can't go into the year saying, yeah, we got Isaiah Wynn, he'll come back eventually, and you got Robert Jones, and then Liam Eichenberg can kind of be that guy until then. I think the Dolphins finally have a better plan this year. I think they have invested on the offensive line. I think they're going to invest in the offensive line a little bit more, or so I hope, because I swear to God, if Jackson Carmine's a backup, one of your two backup guards, you're in a disaster zone. So I think it's really with them, man. And I think when you see how the Dolphins approach this offseason, one player got a three-year contract, James Daniels. Two players got two-year contracts, Tyrell Dodson, who was absolutely awesome last year, and Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. I think you start to see them establishing these standards. It's just a shame that we're doing this in year four of the Mike McDaniel era, where this song and dance is supposed to happen entering year two.
Yeah, that's what's the most disheartening, right? We saw the peak of it, and then it just kind of all kind of unraveled. I do think it's kind of funny, though. We're sitting here, and, you know, we've come on here, and we're probably very positive some days, very negative, but it just seems like right now we're just sucking in all the hopium. I mean, it just feels like, you know, we're sitting here saying that on defense they're better, offense, and I just hope it all comes together, right? It would just be so nice to see it all come together and to see this offense truly click. And I mentioned the Jalen Waddle stuff, shame on me, but there were times that you know, when Tyreek Hill would be banged up or something, he'd be on the sideline. I remember Jalen Waddle going off in one of those games, right? He could be that wide receiver one. So that was the Jets, yep. So, I mean, that's the Jalen Waddle that we want to see more consistency from. But like you said, Jake, it's all going to be won and lost based on that offensive line. And honestly, at this point, with the secondary the way it is, right, it sounds like they're going to have, you know, Ify Melifonwu and Ashton Davis and, you know, those guys kind of compete. But those are going to be your safeties. If you don't bring in a cornerback that, you know, an Asante Samuel or something like that, you're going to have to rely heavily on that defensive line that you built to get to the quarterback. So they built the trenches this offseason, right? The offensive line, defensive line, and, you know, this entire year might come down to those two units.
You mentioned something earlier, Josh, and I didn't want to get us off topic, but I want to get your thoughts here. So I drafted Jalen Wright in Dynasty last year, and he spent most of the year, I think all the year, on my taxi squad. Rookie drafts coming up, three-round rookie draft. You're still in as Jalen Wright is that number two? Because I'm really thinking if I can get Ollie Gordon in the third round, I kind of think I got to do it. I don't know, just listening to the quotes, man, it's like Devon Achane was like raving, like, I'm so happy to have Gordon. And I might be 100% wrong. I'm reading these transcripts, so I don't really understand the tone. I'm not like there listening to the conversation. But listening to Achane or reading Achane talk about Gordon, saying like he's so prepared, he's asking all these questions, he feels like a vet. And then, like, the end of the transcript, there's like, oh, and what about Jalen Wright? Yeah, he's doing good, too. He's a dog. It's just like, I don't know if it's just everybody likes the new player or whatever it is, but that kind of caught me off guard, where I'm wondering if, like, did I just not waste the year? Because I think when you draft a Mike McDaniel running back in fantasy, it's right process. But you just wonder if, like, I got to keep chasing that backup just based on, you know, that great season Gordon had 2 years ago. I mean, he would have probably been like a second round pick if Oklahoma State, am I getting that right?
Yep.
Yes. If Oklahoma State's offensive line didn't absolutely stink.
Yeah, that's I don't almost flip a coin at that point. I think Ollie Gordon might be 20, Jalen Wright's 22, so I could see, you know, why you might lean towards Ollie Gordon, but you're right, man. Based on all of the discussion coming out of camp, and it's early, right? It sounds like everyone's so high on Ollie Gordon where he's going to be hard to keep off the field. So I think you can probably get him in the third round. I know I did two rookie drafts now, I guess, in Dynasty, and I picked him up in, I think it was round three or something like that. And then I drafted Quinn Ewers, because if you have Tua Tagovailoa, man, you need to get your backup for sure. So I like the way you said that. And I think Ollie Gordon maybe has the inside track, you know, based on age and things like that. But you're right, man. You're probably going to continue to chase that RB3 if you have the RB2, right? Because Devon Achane's clearly the RB1.
Where were you drafting, like, ish? Because I have the 11th pick in mind, so I'm just trying to get some context.
Well, I was 103 in the one, and I ended up going to Marion Hampton. So that was the one I did not. I think I picked up Quinn Ewers. The other one, I was 107, and somehow it was a super flex, and Cam Ward fell to me. So I ran to the podium for that.
What?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know how it happened. Cam Ward was there, and I had Tua and Tua and Joe Burrow are my quarterbacks. So I saw Cam Ward, and I was like, I have to do that. So it does seem like most of the drafts I've seen, Ollie Gordon's down to, you know, the third round. And in some, I thought he might have fell to the fourth. So he's right around that area. But I think, you know, as the as we continue to hear these players rave, as we continue to see the highlights in camp, that's only going to shoot up there. So whenever your draft is, man, I would definitely target Ollie Gordon.
I actually don't have a third round pick, so I'm kind of hoping like he could be my first like waiver wire pickup, and then maybe like a Quinn Ewers. I'm kind of leaning. Would you go the running back drafted by the Broncos, R.J. Hampton, right?
R.J. Harvey, yep.
R.J. Harvey. Guy
from UCF that we talked about pretty much on the – I know a lot of people are stoked on him, man, you know, more so with his landing spot. I like Travion Henderson, but I don't know how well he's going to do with – don't they still have Ramondre Stevenson in New England? So it's so hard to figure out the running back units. But, yeah, I like R.J. Harvey, and I think a lot of fantasy experts are high on him as well.
Would taking someone like Matthew Golden, like 11th overall, would that be too high, you think?
I think if he's there, that's probably a decent pick. He's 11th overall. I think that's probably right around where I saw him go. I don't know if you have tight end premium in your league. I know some of mine were, and I was really hoping, you know, Tyler Warren or Colston Loveland would have fell, you know, just to be that. Because, I mean, let's be honest, Colston Loveland, there's a reason the Bears took him ahead of Tyler Warren, so you got to be pretty stoked about that. They call him Sam Laporta Jr. But, yeah, man, Matthew Golden, a lot of people are high on. For me, I'd always try to, if I have Jordan Love, that'd probably be my target, right? I drafted Cam Ward, and I went right to, I think it was round two or three, I took whatever running receiver they drafted, Alec Elmore or something like that, the dude from Stanford, and trying to get that, you know, the stack going. But, dude, I couldn't believe Cam Ward fell that far.
Wait, Hampton or Golden at 11th overall?
Hampton, I mean, dude, Hampton's been going like top three in most of these leagues, and that's even super flex. So I don't.
Harvey, my bad.
Oh, RJ. I guess it would depend on how your unit looks, you know, your running backs and receivers. I'm
leaning the receiver.
Yeah, I'd probably go Golden then.
I'm interested to see it because it was so frustrating trying to play Packers receivers over the last few years because. The thing about listening to people talk fantasy is that everybody's awesome. And that's just kind of what it is. Like, and I'm okay with that. But like, you hear how awesome Romeo Doubs is, and you hear how awesome Jalen Reed is. And then you got Christian Watson catching a 60-yard touchdown. And I'm sitting there like, okay, I'm going to play all these guys and they get me 2 points each. I think where Golden is kind of a difference maker is he wins in those one-on-one X wide receiver matchups that I don't think a lot of, they were hoping Jaden Reed could be that guy, but I don't think he was that guy consistently enough. So that's kind of where I'm going, where, you know, you got a really good offense in Matt LaFleur, you got a solid quarterback in Jordan Love, get his number one receiver. It might be a little bumpy at the start, but that kind of seemed like my thought process, where the Packers are finally getting someone that is going to be like a target funnel, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that was our guy. They wanted him bad. I kind of enjoy talking fantasy football with you because it's, you know, a little bit different, right? It's a little bit of it's an entirely different monster than the Miami Dolphins. But oh, yeah. I like how you said, man, everyone in fantasy is, you know, good and great until you put them in their lineup and they put you 2 points.
Except Dolphin players. I always am so salty. I'm like, how dare you not know that Devon Achane averages 4.7 yards before contact? So that's always fun. But man, this has been a blast. I hope you enjoyed a little fantasy talk here at the end. I saved it for the end just so we could make sure to get our dose of Dolphins. But that is it. That is all the time we have today on another Dolphins podcast. We are probably going to call it a week from here, but we keep the show going throughout the entire offseason. So whether you're on iTunes, Apple, Spotify, 560 WQAM on YouTube, we have an entire library full of shows to keep you satisfied with your Miami Dolphins content. But for another Dolphins podcast, we hope you have a wonderful weekend. And most importantly, fins up.
Fins up. Fins up.